to have a love affair. And just as soon as they find you, they wind you and die you. Fly on the wings of romance. But in the eyes of the world, you're just another girl who loves a merry man. Oh, they do it, they do it, they do it, they do it again.
It is the Crowdcast. I am Carell. So very glad you are joining me, particularly on today's show, because it's going to be one for the record books, child. If we get through this one, then we've got through the best or the worst of it all. Because I got a lot to say today, and you may not want to hear it, but I got a lot to say. So let's begin with Happy St. Patrick's Day. It is Sunday. I took Saturday to myself after Ember and I going to the doctors on Friday. Ember has developed anxiety basically from weather, from the wind and all the noises and stuff. It's got her on edge. So we have her on CBD, but every blood test, every test was great. So, and the CBD is helping. And so basically my little girl grew up in Long Beach. Now she lives in the desert and there's a lot of noise. So she is, you know, developed a little anxiety and the vet just says to love her through it. And things will be okay. So physically, she is absolutely perfect, which is great to hear. As for me, the neurologist thinks I'm okay. He's going to do a nerve conduction study next week, since my biggest fear is MS, ALS, Lou Gehrig's, that kind of stuff. Those things show up sometimes or usually on nerve conduction studies. I've never had one. He said, let's do it. He believes nothing will come of it, but he wants to do it to give me peace of mind. So we'll do that. In other news, there was a horrific shooting, another, and the world is reeling again. And I, you know, have a completely different viewpoint than I might have just, I don't even a year ago. And it's a viewpoint that may not be shared by you as progressives and liberals, as I know that, you know, I know who listens to me. And it's one that may make you not, you know, overly fond of me again. But it's one I'm going to have to share. Also, today I joined the Me Too movement, and they're not going to like it. And we're going to talk about that. So let's start with the shooting. The shooting, right? Let's start with the shooting. So for those of you that have been living in a cave and do not know, basically in Christchurch, New Zealand, of all places, okay, a shooter went on this horrifying rampage, killed 50 Muslims because he's a white nationalist created by Donald Trump. And the details are horrifying, and I've seen the video. First of all, Facebook should be shut down. There should be no Facebook today, okay? Facebook should be shut down. And for those of you watching the video, if I seem a little, I'm buzzed. I went out for St. Patrick's Day to Reraw, the pub here in town. I've had two Guinnesses, that half Guinness, half pear cider, and then one shot of Teeling's whiskey. So I feel good, bada, 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 ba, on this St. Patrick's Day where I would be in Ireland normally. So I feel good. But anyway, this shooter live streamed his event on Facebook, and Facebook let it happen. 17 minutes. And they're trying to get away just like they always do. Fuck Facebook. You know what? Facebook is so fucking horrifying. Oh, we're not responsible. We're not responsible that we let Donald Trump win the election through the spread of fake news. We're not responsible for being the biggest disseminator of fake news. We're not responsible for your data being... Why don't y'all just fucking delete Facebook, for the love of God? You don't need it. They just live stream a massacre, and that's okay with you. Ain't okay with me. And it shouldn't be okay with the FCC. They should shut them down. They should be shut down. But they won't be. They won't be, because y'all love it. Y'all like it. Blah, blah, blah. They should be. There should be no Facebook today. But there is. And this white supremacist went on it, and he live streamed 17 minutes of death, of murder. And it was sad. What was sad to watch is how people are lemmings when someone walks in with a gun. Jesus Christ. There were like 90 people at that mosque. Some of them would have died, but not 50 had they rushed him. You know? Are they cowards? I don't want to say that about dead people, but come on. You're going to stand there and be slaughtered? Somebody run up and try to kill the gunman. I watched the video. Nobody did. Nobody tried to subdue him. You know? So, whatever. It's not the victim's fault. I'm just saying, if someone walks into a room that I'm in and they start shooting, I'm taking cover. And then if I see that they're killing masses of people and that there's enough of us to rush him, I'm going to say, let's rush him. You know, or her, but it wouldn't be her. But anyway, so they walk in and they kill these people. And now gun control, gun laws, gun. And that's just so freaking stupid. This morning I met my congressperson out walking in Red Rock. And her son, nephew, grandchild, I don't know what he was, young blonde kid, had a shirt on that said, control guns, control Congress. Or better control of guns, better control of guns, something like that. And I said, how would you control guns? That's when he said, well, my congressperson's right here. And I'm like, oh, really? Well, how would you control guns? And everything she said made sense, bump stock, this other thing. Except it doesn't. Okay. First of all, the notion that you can control guns, that's pretty crazy. Okay. Because they're not a weapon that likens itself to control. Second of all, I have learned that guns are the manifestation of our hatred to one another. Guns are a manifestation of our fear of one another. That's what guns are at their core. They're not metal. They're not bullets. They're not firearms. That's not what they are. Guns are a manifestation of our fear and our hatred. Of our fear, there was a time we needed them because it was a Wild West and a frontier and things would harm you. And then our hatred. Because it was the Wild West and it was a frontier and people wanted to harm each other. I guess what we're living in now is sort of the equivalent, you know? It's sort of the equivalent of the Wild West. And as much as I hear people scream about gun control, you can't, okay? Here's what no one will tell you. You can't control guns. That's not possible. So you say, oh, I'll get rid of them. Well, you can't get rid of hatred. And so it's funny because, you know, everyone says there are two sides to every argument. And then, of course, I feel there's not. There's the right side and the wrong side. I guess that's two sides, but one's wrong. I've been wrong about the gun debate. I've been wrong. It is not guns. I own a gun. I could go get my gun and show you my gun. It's beautiful. Tyler gave it to me. It's like a $1,500 gun. It's so beautiful. It's a snub-nose 38 snub-nose revolver. A Colt. Colt vintage 38 snub-nose. It's like a $1,500 gun. And I don't use it for problem solving. I don't use it to go and annihilate those that I hate. The gun is not a problem. Okay, it'll never be fired in anger, hopefully. So it's not a problem. And I'm not a problem having it. And whether you like that or not, it doesn't matter. The fact is, I'm fine. It's locked up. It's good. I'm good. We're fine. It comes unlocked at night. And I might get a concealed carry permit. Because guess what? You can't guarantee me. Now, Friday night, there was a shootout at the Bellagio. Okay, Friday night. I was out Friday night. And Friday night, in front of the Bellagio, the police started shooting at a suspect who had robbed the place. Right in front of the hotel, on the Las Vegas Strip, gunfire. Okay, a mosque, gunfire. Malls, gunfire. Shopping malls, gunfire. Okay, I'm going to have a gun. And you're like, Carell, the answer is not to arm everybody. Yeah, actually it is. They're actually right about that. You're like, no, yeah, actually. If there were armed guards at a mosque, do you think a shooter would walk into it? If there were people out front, because that's where we've gotten to. Now, if you don't like it, don't blame me. Blame the fucking culture, okay? The culture of hatred, bigotry, division, the culture of the other, the culture of we won't give you health care. We won't give you a life. We won't give you a guaranteed salary so you don't slip into poverty. The culture that just leaves you out there on your fucking own and says, swing in the wind if you have to. That culture, the culture of hatred, our culture. We don't love. Oh, we talk a good game. we don't love as a culture. We don't love each other. If we love each other, why doesn't everybody have health insurance? If we love each other, why doesn't everybody have a guaranteed income? If we love each other, I mean, just continue on down the line with whatever you want to put in there. But if we loved each other, these things wouldn't be happening. So we don't love other Americans. Stop acting like we do. We hate most other Americans. And you know, we don't. Yes, we do. Children are dying in camps at the border. Do you love them? Well, no. Are they Americans? Well, they're not Americans. I don't have to. No, you're supposed to love all humanity. It's funny, Tyler and I were talking. I've been watching Star Trek Discovery. It's some brilliant, brilliant television. And just as good as the original series, by the way. And I was talking about the emotions we ascribe to being human, okay? The emotions that we, when we talk about we've regained our humanity, and we ascribe certain feelings to the term humanity, compassion, love, understanding. Actually, those aren't the overriding traits of a human being. Anger, fear, indecision, anxiety, depression. Those are overriding traits of a human. Compassion, love, empathy? No. You know, on Star Trek, Spock has a battle because he has trouble with empathy. Don't most Americans? Do most of you really know what it feels like to be the other? A lot of you do, but you know what I'm saying. Do you think most Americans know what it feels like? Do you think Trump supporters know what it feels like to be the other? So we have this Hollywood that vilifies every villain is an Arab, okay? So you got villains that are Arabs. You've got a president who's Islamophobic and homophobic and everything phobic. You've got 60 million Americans that think, I mean, I just saw this woman ranting about Sharia law up at Congress and I just wanted to slap her, just like, shut up, you stupid bitch, you know? And so you have this culture that's mean and horrible. And that is our culture. Nowadays, the culture of the world is reprehensible. It's mean and horrible and purports to be the opposite. But it's not the opposite. It's not. It's mean and it's horrible. So guns are not the problem. And I know you're going to be like, but Carell, you said we should get... Yeah, nope, totally changed. Guns are not the problem. You should be able to walk down the street and see a million guns and have no violence. Why? Because your culture wouldn't even consider it. Because it would be so far removed from normal behavior that it just wouldn't happen. But we have glorified violence in Hollywood for so... Hollywood's to blame for most of this, by the way. You're like, oh, how do you say that? It really is, and I'm a liberal in Hollywood. But in every film, the answer to every problem is a bigger gun. You know, not education, not thinking the problem through, not dialogue. Every problem ends with a gun. On Star Trek, they barely shoot anybody, by the way, to solve their problems. On Star Trek, they pretty much solve their problems through education, science, math, understanding, compassion, dialogue. They don't solve it with weapons. Oh, they use their photon torpedoes and the like when the enemy rears its ugly head. But it's always a matter of last resort. And when they do fire their phasers, they're on stun. They're on stun. Weapons are not the problem. The fact that we want to, and you say, well, Carell, if they didn't have the ability to get guns, so stop it. God, the liberals have sold you a line of shit, haven't they? Because they've poured oil over castle walls, bows and arrows and rocks. And oh, but then they wouldn't be able to wipe out 100 people. You're right. If we had no guns, it would be safer. You're absolutely right on that. Safety wise, no guns would make it safer. But they're not talking about no guns. They're talking about gun control. So that means there'll still be guns. So that means there's no control. If there are guns, there's zero control. Okay? And if there is zero control on the gun, if there is guns, then it has to be the people that are controlled. And when I say controlled, I mean the people have to not want to pick up a gun and use it. That's what has to happen. Okay? The people have to not want to turn to that weapon. But it's our weapon of first choice. Our law enforcement uses it. Our, you know, they shouldn't. Bobbies don't have guns as first defense, but we do. And so the mosque attack happened because of culture, because of Donald Trump, because of people like him who paint Muslims as the enemy, because of people like him who paint anyone other than the enemy, because people like him that says a gun is a solution to a problem, that war is okay, that violence is okay. That's why they died. Not because the guy could go buy an automatic weapon. He could have said, look, the biggest gay massacre in history, the Upstairs Lounge, okay? Biggest gay massacre in history, and you probably don't even know the name, the Upstairs Lounge. And did the guy use a gun? No. He locked the doors and set them on fire. They burned to death in place because there were bars on the window and they couldn't get out. Did he have a gun? No. Did he kill 40 plus people? Yes. We do need to address the gun issue, but we need to address it from the standpoint of why we're turning to them. No one should be able to have an AR-15 or a weapon of war, but it doesn't matter if they do. They shouldn't want to use it against their neighbor or go to a mall. Most of these shooters have guns obtained legally. So controls do what? Muslims died because we as a culture have accepted the vilification of Muslims since 9/11, so 18 years. So for 18 years, it's been okay to vilify Muslims. And we wonder why this guy did this. It wasn't that he had a gun. So what if he had? I have a gun. It was what he had in his heart, not what he had in his gun chest. And that's that. A nation's gun control starts with their hearts and not with the guns. So until you can reach people and make it so, until you can take guns out of Hollywood, until you can make Muslims not the enemy anymore in media, then this is just going to keep going. Oh, New Zealand's going to change all their gun laws and maybe it will help. It helped in Australia. It'll just happen someplace else. And if you changed all the gun laws, there'd still be gun violence and there'd still be death. People look at trucks. Cars and trucks are now the number one source of terrorism in the country. Cars and trucks. That's what people are using and running people over with. It's the culture, people. It's not guns. You got to get off the gun argument. You got to stop it. It's a useless straw man argument that progressives and conservatives have uselessly been fighting over for decades while people die. Start asking ourselves, why are people killing each other? Hatred. And where is that hatred coming from? So how about we have hatred control instead of gun control? How about we label right-wing extremists what they are, a threat to our sovereignty, and a threat to the nation, and a threat to the world. Any right-wing extremist are a threat to national security, not guns. So why don't we label them that? Why isn't Fox News labeled extremist and a threat to national security? It is. It helped cause the Christchurch. Why doesn't when the blood fall on the hands of conservatives, why do they get to wash it off? Why? Let's start thinking about gun control as heart control. You must reach these people and quell their anger. And if you don't, then you must annihilate them. And I said it. If right-wing extremists won't calm down, put down their guns and stop killing Muslims, and then we're going to have to start rounding them up. Oh, Carell. Oh, Carell, what? When you have cancer cells, you get rid of them. The guns are not the cancer. The hatred, the institutionalized bigotry, that's the hatred. All right. I'm still going to join the Me Too movement today, too, and they're still not going to like it. So we'll do that right after this. I mean, really, you're going to be like, what? It is the Carellcast. I am Carell, and I have not seen Finding Neverland. I will not watch Finding Neverland, and I think those two idiots are idiots. I don't know if it happened to them, and I don't care. I don't care. If it happened to them, their parents delivered them to the altar of Michael and fed them to the beast, so I don't care. And let me tell you why I don't care. Because they're liars, okay? Because they're little sniveling liars. And as far as I'm concerned, in my opinion, they're lying to themselves about what this did to them. Not about whether or not he did it. But they're lying to themselves about what it did. And how do I know? Because millions of people live through sexual abuse or sexual trauma as a child, and it does not ruin their life, and it has not irreparably changed them, and they are not, you know, some victim. We have become this victim society. Everybody's a victim. Everybody's being, oh, it's all abusive. It's all terrible, and everybody's horrible, and we want to sanitize it all, and we're just going the opposite way. Now, how do I know this? Because it happened to me. Because it's happened to me more than once. Because if you look around in your family, you'll find it's happened to somebody in there. And you're going to be like, no, yes, it has. You don't need to watch Finding Neverland to interview survivors of sexual abuse. Just start talking to your family members. Carell, yeah, okay. When I was 13 years old, I knew I was gay. I knew then that I was gay. I did when I was 13, seventh grade. And in seventh grade, the closest family members, I mean, you know, who's closest? Father, mother, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters. That's your closest family members, okay? Your mother, your father, your grandparents, your uncles, aunts, and your brothers and sisters. Those are your that's immediate family right there. Well, when I was 13 years old, a person in my immediate family, who I would later found out was bisexual but could never express it, when I was 13, a immediate family member got arrested and called me at 13. Because if their wife found out what they arrested for, lewd conduct in a men's room, that would have been that. And I loved this woman, this wife of this immediate family member. And what, because they were an immediate family member, did? And I loved them. And I would do anything to protect them. Anything. You know, when you love someone, you will do anything to protect them. And those aren't just words. So at 13, I took it upon myself, after I bailed the person out from jail, to say to them, you know, you're going to get a disease, you're going to get beaten or killed, or you're going to get arrested again if you keep that kind of behavior up. And they were like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to lose it all. But next time you have the urge, just, you know, do me. Well, can a 13-year-old make that offer when they're making it because they're just trying to protect someone? Well, two people trying to protect the person that's out engaging in very risky behavior and trying to protect their wife. So in that 13-year-old's brain, the way to solve the problem, to prevent the person from going to the bathrooms and having sex and getting beaten or killed or whatever, and the way to stop the wife from finding out, crushing her and breaking up their marriage and their children and all of that, was to just let him do it to me. And from the time I was 13 until the time I was 16 years old, that happened. And it happened often, probably once a month. And as I look back on it, there's no feelings whatsoever. Meaning, I don't have any hatred towards the person. Now, I have come through years of therapy to know that it wasn't my doing, it wasn't my fault, that that person should have been adult enough to say to the 13-year-old, no. And they were in their 40s. So that person should have said, no, I'll handle this problem on my own. But that's not what happened. And while I am conflicted in some areas about the logic of it all, I am not remorseful, and my life has not been ruined. And I don't sit and sob uncontrollably every time I recall the incidents. In fact, I barely recall the incidents. I feel nothing but pity for the person. I don't feel hatred. I don't feel shame. I just feel pity. I made a mistake in the offer because I was 13. They made a mistake in accepting the offer. I should have not, you know, every month allowed it to happen. But at the same time, it did save this person's life. They were never arrested again. And they're dead now. They went to their grave, never having to worry about it, basically. Is that wrong? Sure. It's a month of Sundays wrong. I mean, is it gross? Yeah, it's really gross. It's a lot of things. It's sick, it's wrong, it's gross, it's a billion things. But is it life-ending? Is it to where I have to openly sob and who's to blame and let's do a documentary and let's just put a... No. Because like many of you who have gone through something like this, and more of you have than anybody knows... Some of you might be thinking, Carell, how can you say this? How can you tell the world that from 13 to 16, it wasn't just then? You don't think I've had a boss say, blow me, and you've got the job? And I blew them. Hello, and got the job. I thought that's why they're called blowjobs. I thought you blew someone and got a job. That's what I thought. Is that wrong? You don't think at workplaces I was told all I need is a good woman called fag? Yeah. I have been sexually harassed in the workplace. I have been literally, I guess you'd call it rape. Was it rape? I don't know. I didn't say no, but I get, you know, I don't know, whatever you might want to call it, abused as a youth. And what did it do to me as a person? Made me stronger. It made me realize that people do fucked up things to each other, but that doesn't have to fuck you up forever. That you can have horrific things happen to you, terrible things happen to you. I've had things happen to me that most will never have happened to them. And you can still survive and be sane and be happy. I was just at Reraw with Tyler and Steve and we were having a ball. You don't have to be its victim. And it doesn't have to be the worst thing that ever happened to you. It can just be a thing that happened to you. And that's what the Me Too movement doesn't want to admit. That you don't have to be some victim from all of this. That, you know what? It happened and I'm fine. And do I hold malice towards the person? No. And should they be punished? No. If they were alive, I would not want them punished. I wouldn't want them to lose their job, their life, their career. Because I did it so they wouldn't. So I wouldn't want them punished. And I mean that. I hold no malice towards them. Why? Because what good would it do? It happened. It was wrong. It shouldn't happen again. And I'll make sure that no one I love ever goes through it, or if I can. But that's it. That's the end. That's the end of that saga for me. Do I carry it with me? No. It's a memory, but doesn't choose the man I go out with. It didn't choose my husband. It didn't cause problems between us. It didn't make me not want him to touch me. None of that. Isn't it amazing? You can be sexually abused and not be a puddle. Isn't it amazing that for 3 years of your life, you can have a 40 plus year old man doing stuff to you. And when you're a 40 plus year old man, you're fine. And you're not out running, doing it to other kids either. You know, we let so many things define us. You know, our sexuality, our jobs, our relationships. They become who we are. They define us. Sexual abuse does not have to define you. In fact, it doesn't have to be a major blip on your radar. It doesn't have to make you a victim. You don't have to cry about it. Now, if you do and you are, okay, fine. But for the most part, I think the world is waiting for someone to tell people that, yeah, you can survive it and not care. What? You can survive it and have it not matter. In other words, it's in its box. It's put away. You don't need it. You don't need to access it. There's no reason. Nowadays, we think we got to pull that box out, open up that box, tell everybody all the sordid, horrific details and sob and cry about what the horrible people did to us. For what? For pity? For catharsis? What? What do these two in Finding Neverland get from this? They're not any better now psychologically. They're not, you know, they're not suddenly okay. So what was the point? There wasn't one. There's no point to that movie. It does nothing except show two people who have been shattered by an event that they probably shouldn't have been shattered by. Now, I wasn't 7 to 10 years old when this happened to me. And, you know, I, at 13, think I have a little more understanding of the world than an 8-year-old. But still a kid. Still a kid. You know, there's been conclusive research that sexual abuse of a child does not ruin the child's life, that the child is able to compartmentalize it and get over it. That research has been squelched for decades because no one wants to believe that something so horrific that you could actually move on from it. Well, you can. And the Me Too movement is not about moving on. It's about vengeance. And that's okay because the women are pissed and they should be. And these people should pay some price for rape and for all of that. However, when a movement just becomes about vengeance, retribution, destroying careers, destroying lives, over what? Something that may not even matter that much to the person. Yes, Harvey Weinstein did all those things to those women. Are every one of those women in psychiatric wards right now babbling, blathering idiots because of what he did? No. They're not. They're not. So should he get away with it? No, of course he shouldn't get away with it. But should we make them feel like these victims, that they have to be crushed, that their whole lives are now ruined? And should courts start awarding settlements based on the fact that, well, you've ruined the rest of their life? What happened to me from 13 to 16 did not ruin the rest of my life. And I know that's an unpopular opinion, but it didn't. My life has been fine. My relationships have been fine as anybody else's. They've been no more problematic. Did it leave damage? What doesn't? What doesn't leave damage where the heart is concerned, where there's emotions, where there's sex? You know, what doesn't leave some damage? But is that damage irreparable? Well, maybe for 5% of the people. But for the rest? No. You know, I saw Blue Bloods last night, and on it, they said that a woman should only be interviewed by another woman when she is talking about sexual assault. And I would believe that, actually. I would say that's probably a more comfortable situation. But they also said that they walk a fine line when they ask questions about, well, you know, did you go back up to the room? Did you, you know, what were you wearing? You know, that sort of stuff. Because they say, women and victims say, you're trying to victim blame. So if you're trying to ascertain the full scope of what happened, well, had you slept with them before? They say, well, you're victim blaming. Because why does any of that matter? They did it. I said, no, it's a crime. I don't care if I slept with them 50 times today. The one time I said no, they needed to stop. And so we want sexual politics to be cut and dry, including sexual harassment. We want the politics and the politics of sex and the politics of sexual harassment to be cut and dry. And we want all victims to be alike. We want them all to be sobbing messes in front of the camera. Law & Order SVU has been on 16 seasons, so we can see sobbing messes in front of the camera laying out sordid sexual details of what happened to them. It's voyeuristic and it's wrong. Finding Neverland is 4 hours of voyeuristic masturbatory pleasure for those that like to hear details about little boys having sex. It's disgusting. Only therapists should be hearing what's in Finding Neverland. You don't need to hear it. I don't need to hear it. It's voyeuristic and it's wrong. And now this whole Me Too movement has become like a big voyeuristic movement where we just can't wait to hear the details of the next sexual assault. And for what? To give them peace? They should have peace already. Meaning, even though the perpetrators have not been convicted, and they will need that to have some closure, they, in terms of emotional peace with the event, they should already be in it. They should be told they can get over it, that they can move through it, that it doesn't have to define them. Where are we hearing these voices in the Me Too movement? That this doesn't have to define you. It doesn't have to be who you are. You can actually be over it. You can be fine with it. You don't even have to care. Yeah, he did it, but I don't care. Doesn't mean he shouldn't be punished. It just means that you're fine with it. You say, Carell, how can you be fine with rape? I'm not talking, you know, there's all kinds. Mine was not rape. When you get held down by five people and raped, yes, that might ruin your life. That may, you know, cause you a problem. You know, you're raped. It's physical. It's horrible. It's the most just horrific crime short of murder that I can think of. So yeah, that's going to leave you scarred. Violence. But if it's sexual assault with no violence, does it make you a lifelong victim? No. You are not a lifelong victim of sexual abuse. You're not. You might have endured it or encountered it in your lifetime, but that doesn't mean that it is your lifetime. You can let it go. You can say, you know what? It happened. It sucked. It's terrible. It shouldn't happen to anybody. But I'm okay. It's fine. You know, I don't forgive them, but I don't hold malice towards them. And when I say I don't forgive them, I don't forgive them in the sense of a kid can't make choices like that. Okay? A kid can't. So I don't forgive them for allowing a kid to make a really bad choice. Okay? I don't forgive them for that. They should have cared enough about me to not let me make that bad choice. Okay? However, as for the sex itself, I don't care. When I look back on it, I don't start crying. Oh my God, he touched me. I don't quiver when I think about the person doing what they did. I just look at it and go, it happened and it was terrible in so much as it was a huge mistake. And you weren't of the mind to say no to making it. You thought you were helping. A lot of you get abused sexually because you thought you were helping. You thought that by doing it, you would make someone feel better. Or by giving in, allowing them to abuse you, that you would be spared, that you would, you know, have some peace or something. We all have our reasons for what we do in certain situations. It's what's after that I'm concerned about. You're not a victim. Even if terrible things have happened to you, you're not a victim. Being a victim requires a victim mindset. Those two in Finding Neverlands are victims of their parents and their own emotional distraught. Are they victims of Michael Jackson? I don't know. I don't know. Do you? I don't know. But if they were, should it destroy them for their entire life? No, it should not. And we need to change the attitude around sexual abuse, not assault, but abuse. Assault and violence, that does scar you. Being hit, being beaten, that scars you for a long time. It's physical. It's terrible. Being raped, that's terrible. I'm talking about abuse. You know, someone having sex with you that isn't forced, but you don't want it. But they're not like holding you down. You know, that's abuse. Violence, no. You don't get over that. Yeah, well, you can. Again, you don't have to be a victim. You can get over it. But it's violence. It can, you know, it's terrible. But just sex? Saying just sex ruined my life? No. No. It didn't. Maybe the experience didn't ruin your life. You ruined your life in your response to it. You had a choice. You could either respond from a place of strength, own what happened, compartmentalize it, put it away, deal with it, pack it up, and send it off into a tube out into space, or carry it around like a brick every day and make it color everything you do. And then they've won. I wasn't going to let the abuser win. I wasn't going to let the abuser, you know, completely and totally ruin the rest of my life. I wasn't going to give them that. And so I wonder, why do Safechuck, why are they giving Michael Jackson even more now? Bringing his name back into the public. If they really hated Michael Jackson for what he did, although they say they still love him. If they really hated him, then why would they even bring up his name? Why even do the movie? Oh, to help other victims. Help them do what? Come forward? People come forward when they want to. You know, and yes, they can hear another story and that can inspire them to come forward. But not that story. It did nothing. And they're sick. They need mental help. I've seen enough excerpts to know they're not well. And what did that to them? What made them not well? Michael Jackson sleeping with them, if he did? Is that what did it? Here's the clue. No, it's not. What did it was the aftermath and how it was dealt with and the shame they thought they were supposed to feel. Why would you feel ashamed if someone else abused you? Well, I don't. I feel no shame in telling you a family member from the time I was 13 to 16 abused me, because even though I said go ahead and do it, guess what? I was a kid. So I have no shame whatsoever that an adult overstepped their boundaries with me, because they shouldn't have. So why should I be ashamed because someone else made a mistake? Why should I be ashamed over sex? It was sex. Wasn't pretty, didn't like it, but it was sex. Why would I feel ashamed of that? I'm not ashamed that I had sex with this person. I'm ashamed of them for not making the right choice. Do I love them? Did I love them until they died? After 16, and they didn't die until I was in my mid-20s. After 16, did I talk to them? Yes. Did I go to family dinners and reunions? Yep. And when I was in the room with them, did I want to run and crawl out of my skin? And nope. Nope. I felt nothing but sorry for them. That's all I felt ever after that. And love. I felt love. They were a close family member. And even though they did a terrible mistake, they were flawed. They were flawed humans. And you're supposed to love someone in spite of their flaws. So yeah, I still loved them. I did. To this day, I still love them. I don't hate them for what they did. I don't. I really don't care. I really don't. It's ancient. It's 40 years ago. You know, I survived it. Why carry it with me? I survived it. Okay, so why let it color any other part of my world? I survived it. So that means let it go. You know, if you're involved in a plane crash or a boat sinks and you survive, you will use that experience. I'm sure it will traumatize you for a while. But then afterwards, you will use that experience to further your growth, to make you stronger and more resilient. That's all that experience did to me. It made me aware that family dynamics are complex. It made me aware that inside every family, this is probably going on in some family. Hell, it was allowed in the royals, you know? It made me realize that I didn't have to look outside of my own family for victims of heinous crimes. I have a family member who's committed murder. You know, I have a family member who is an abuser, obviously. I have a family member who has stolen things. And we know that they've stolen things. You know, I have a family member that is so emotionally hurtful to everybody all the time that we basically don't invite them anywhere. I have had abusive family members verbally. Every one of us in our families has this going on. And we don't have to let it define us. We don't have to let it be who we are. And you know what? Here's a bit, you know what? You don't have to be angry at the abuser. I know you're like, what? But you don't. You can feel pity for them. You can feel nothing. You can just have ambivalence towards them. Like, I'm not going to invest any emotion in you. You are not worth it. But you don't have to hate them. Everyone acts like you're supposed to hate your abuser. You don't have to hate them. You can pity them. You can have no feelings. You can be completely ambivalent. You can have anger, but you don't have to hate. So in this Me Too frenzy that we're in, we're finding that not everyone is a squeaky clean. And we're also finding that there's a lot more, you know, victims of abuse out there than maybe we had even thought. And they're still out there. And a lot of them won't. Who's going to go on the radio and say what I said today? You know, I will give it to these two guys in the Finding Neverland. It did take some cojones to sit there for 4 hours and detail all that crap. Because they knew the world would be watching. And that's some incredibly personal information that the world didn't need to hear. You don't need to know what Harvey Weinstein did to those women. You don't need to know where he touched them and for how long and what he need to do. You don't need to know about forced copulation, this. You don't need to know that. Why do you need to know that? Why do you need to sit and hear two people detail and then he touched me on my genitalia and put his mouth on top of? Why do you need to hear that? You don't need to hear that. It's salacious. It's lurid. It's lewd. You don't need to hear it. I don't know why we do. I don't need to know what Harvey Weinstein did to Rose McGowan. Tell the cops. Another thing about Me Too survivors, I think it's great that they're telling the world that they're survivors, that we live through this. This happened to us, it was wrong, and we lived through it. I think that's incredible. However, I don't think that they should go on with the details. You know, and only because we've heard them now, okay? We get it. People are dogs, they're abusing people, we get it. You can tell us you were abused. We'll believe you now. You know, this is the new era. But we don't have to hear how. You know, we don't have to know that he grabbed your boob and then he touched your ass and then he wanted to put his hand down your pants. We don't need to know that. Save that for the investigators. We don't need to know. Well, yes, Carell, we do. Why? If we need to know, then why aren't we watching the... Why isn't the 17-minute murder video from the mosque on every TV network if we need to know? You want to see what a mass shooting really looks like? Here. Watch. You want to just make it real for you instead of you just hearing about the shooting? You want to see them just standing there like lemmings getting mowed down, screaming and moaning? Well, no, Carell. So that's too much to watch. We don't need those details. The details that could actually change us and our stance on guns, we don't need to see. Osama bin Laden, we captured him, we executed him. We didn't get to see it. They say there's video, they say there's pictures. We spent 10 years and $10 billion trying to find the guy. We don't get to come. We don't get to see him shot. You know? And why? It would be too much for us. But sitting and hearing for 4 hours what Michael did to little boys, that's not too much for us? Really. I was sexually abused. Not just from 13 to 16. I have had sex used as a weapon over me more than once. More than once. Have I been sexually abusive since then? Maybe. By today's standards, probably. I know I'm a sexual harasser. I am. I've made comments to coworkers about how hot they are, or put that down and let's go into the break room or whatever. I've said that. You can't now, but I have. So am I one of those? Yep, that's me. So in this new era where everyone is tripping over themselves to tell their story, we kind of, you know, don't need to hear all of it. You can tell us your story. I was attacked. This person attacked me. They forced me to have sex. There, you can leave it there. You don't have to say, they forced me to have sex by holding me down and ripping off my panties. We don't need that part, okay? Save that for Law and Order. All we need to know is, I said no, they did it, it's wrong. That's it. That's all we need to know. We don't need to know where, how many times, all of that. We don't. And yet we do. And then when it comes to victims, we have all been victimized by something. Maybe not as horrible as me. Maybe you haven't been sexually abused. A lot of you have been, though. Maybe you haven't, you know, been told if you give me oral sex, you can get the job. You know, maybe you haven't been told that. I have. You know, and I did it at, 19, 20, whatever. I did it. And had it done to me from 13 to 16. And am I sitting before you today, teary-eyed and weepy, and I can't believe it happened. It's so horrible. Nah, it happened. It was bad, but oh well. Oh well. How is that going to help me in my present? How is going through all the salacious details for you going to help me or you? Just know that I survived it, and so can you. Just know that it didn't ruin me, and it doesn't have to ruin you. Just know that I don't hate him, and you don't have to hate your abuser if you don't want to. You don't have to love him. I did love mine for the longest time, and I still do. I love him. His memory, whatever. He was very kind to me when I was a small child. Was he grooming me? I don't know. But you know what? No, I don't, because no. But, you know, all I know is that when they died, I was sad. I thought, well, that's too bad. You know, I was sad. I didn't think, good, I hope he rots in hell. No, I was sad for his wife. I hoped the secret would never come out. I hoped if he had done it with other people, that would never come out. Why, Carell? Why hurt his wife? Why? Why hurt people just because you've been hurt? And that's just what we do now. We get hurt, so we want to hurt someone else. Well, I don't. I am a Me Too survivor, and I don't want to hurt anybody. I'm not angry enough at anybody. You know, if they were alive, unless they were doing something around 13-year-olds or doing something detrimental, I wouldn't want them fired from their job. And I mean that. If my abuser were alive today in his, how old would he be, like 70, 80? Probably 80. If he were alive today in his 80s and did have a job, I wouldn't want him to lose it because of what he did in his 40s to me. And now, you know, if he was in a movie, I wouldn't want all of the scenes from the movie he was in stricken because of what he did to me. Because quite frankly, I don't care what he did to me. What he did to me was a mistake. And what he did to me was wrong. And what I let him do to me was wrong and was a mistake. Well, mistakes happen and we all make them. And this was a horrible one. And I'm not going to let it destroy me or define me. I'm not going to let it be co-opted into someone's movement. I'm not going to let someone use it for their agenda. And a lot of women and men, oh, Miss Ember, what are you barking at? Yeah, finally, at the end of the show, Miss Ember makes her little, well, she's on CBD, so I think she was sleeping. I'm not going to let someone else make it their agenda. The Me Too movement has taken really touching and important stories and used them to promote their own agenda. And I'm sorry, I disagree with that. And I know this is an unpopular opinion, but shaping victims to suit your agenda of what? Vindictiveness? they want to change the structure. I get that. I applaud them. However, it's not. Now, it swung the other way, but it's still going on behind the scenes. Because you can't change that part of our culture. You can't stop rape. People are always going to rape people. People are always going to be sexually aggressive. You can't stop it. Unless you neuter everybody. And since you can't stop it, then we should be upfront about it and say, if it happens to you, it doesn't mean you have to be a puddle. And if it happens to you, speak up. And if what the person has done to you is a crime, let them be punished. Would I, back then, have sent the person to jail? No. Would I now send the person to jail? No. I wouldn't. What good would that do? Would it make me feel better? Would it make it have not happened? Nope. It's like what I want to share with you now. Yes, Friday, March 15th, 2004, little old me, Charles Raymond Carell Boulay, changed California state law when my appeal was won and gays and lesbians could then sue for wrongful death. And it was retroactive 12 months. That changed people's lives. It changed the world. And I did that Friday, 14 years ago. Andrew did it by dying. And then I did it by fighting with Michael Lotta, the attorney who would just not turn me down. Everyone else had. Jonathan Shibley, who helped write the appeal. These people and I helped a little bit by this ruling. And I helped a few gay people by this ruling. But the ruling did nothing for me, really. Wrongful death in California is capped at $250,000. The lawyers cost $220,000. Okay? The remainder I gave to Jake and Heather, because what could they have given me in that lawsuit that would have made it right? What could they have done that would have brought him back or changed the horrifying treatment that we got that night? Fired everybody, handed me the hospital? No. Nothing would have solved the ache in me that Andrew's death left. So at the end of the day, that lawsuit really was for other people. It was for Andy and me to prove that we counted, but to also prove that gays everywhere counted. I look at Me Too and I wonder, now what's it for? You know, my lawsuit, at the end of the day, it wasn't really for me. It was, but it wasn't. And I look at Me Too and I say, what's it for? Is it going to make a huge difference in terms of how we treat each other? Cosmetically, yes. Underneath, no. It's funny, before I leave you, and I love you, and happy St. Pat's, I started by saying with guns that it really isn't the guns. We don't want to face that. It really is us. We're the problem, not guns. We really don't want to face that because it's an overwhelming problem. I mean, that's how do you fix that? So we really do want to blame guns because it's easier than blaming ourselves. And unless we fix the culture, there's no solution. Well, Me Too is like that. Unless we fix the culture that says it's okay to prey upon people sexually, it's okay to prey upon those who are weaker, it's okay. Unless we change that culture, that's what they're trying to do with the Me Too movement, is change that male entitled culture. But it's not. It's just pissing men off. Well, they should be pissed. No, they shouldn't. They're their allies. The only people who are going to stop Me Too moments from happening are men, not women. Okay, women, can I just tell you, you can't stop Me Too unless you arm yourselves. It's men that have to change their behaviors. And until they do, you can hashtag yourself into a stupor, but it's still going to happen. We have got to change the culture that says weapons are okay, that says sexual aggression is okay, that yes means or no means yes, and that women can't really decide for themselves. We have got to change that culture. I am Carell. Be who you want to be so long it don't hurt anybody. My show is supported by you through Patreon. You go to reallycarell.com and you join. It's a great website. It's free. And you join there. And then you click donate. And you give $5 a month. And it changes everything. So go to reallycarell.com. I'm sure we'll talk more about this on my 6 minutes during the week. I hope I haven't hurt or upset any of you. If you are a victim, okay, of an assault, like physical assault that was involved, rape, then I wasn't talking about you, okay? I'm talking about like the kids from Michael Jackson. I'm talking about the supermodels that went up to Harvey, you know, Weinstein's room, and he didn't rape them. He let them go. He was forceful, but then he let them go. That doesn't have to ruin the rest of their life. They can, in fact, get over it. It doesn't have to be something that stays with them for decades. They could actually forget it if they wanted to. And I don't think that's a popular opinion. Oh, sure, punish the guy, absolutely. Hang him by his nutsack. But as for you, your healing, it doesn't have to take decades. You really can get past it if you want. I'm proof. And I guess that's what I wanted to say today. You can move past any horror. My husband died in front of me of malpractice. My mother died 2 years later. I've had death threats. I've been sexually abused. You want to go through the horrors I've endured? I've had die of AIDS written on my garage door. I've had die fag put on a plumber's wrench and hurled through my window. You know, I've been held at gunpoint, physically beaten, fag bashed. I've been told I don't matter. I don't count. I shouldn't be able to get married, that I'm worthless because I suck dick. You want to talk about the abuses heaped upon people in life? Gay people should be shell-shocked, but they're not. Why not? Because they know, and I know, that terrible things happen to you, but you've got to let them go. If Me Too helps people let it go, then yay. Bravo for Me Too. If it helps women and men let go of that baggage, then great. It has served a marvelous purpose. But if Me Too's purpose is to help them hold on to it, make them victims, and be a witch hunt, then no. Then it's not the greatest thing ever. So try to understand where I'm coming from and not be mad. I'll see you tomorrow.